I don't talk about a bipartisan approach to education anymore. I talk about a nonpartisan approach.
In the second part of our three-part episode, my colleague Rich Long sits down with former West Virginia governor and longtime education leader Bob Wise for a candid and wide-ranging conversation about what it really takes to drive lasting change in American education. Drawing on decades of experience as a member of Congress, two terms as governor of West Virginia, and his role as president of the Alliance for Excellent Education, Governor Wise offers a rare insider's view on how policy, pedagogy, and politics intersect. Rich Long, who is interviewing Governor Wise, has worked in the education policy field for over 40 years as an advocate for literacy, Title I, and school improvement. Over the course of the discussion, Governor Wise unpacks the triangle that shapes every major education decision. He explores how research on the science of learning can and must move from theory into actual classroom practice and reflects on what policymakers generally need from educators. He also reflects on what educators need from policymakers. Governor Wise shares firsthand stories illustrating how powerful experiences, not just white papers, often move political leaders into action. Governor Wise puts into context the uncertainty of our times when schools are emerging from COVID-19, when they navigate political upheaval and grapple with the rapid rise of AI. Governor Wise argues that progress today will require a renewed commitment to nonpartisan problem solving and a sharper focus on what the public actually wants from schools: student mental health, literacy, safety, and meaningful preparation for college and careers. This conversation offers a thoughtful, grounded look at the future of education change and the practical work needed to ensure that research, policy, and classroom practice move together. Rich.
We've made some progress, and we've also learned a lot about the process of change itself.
Yep.
What do you think?
I think you have to realize that there's a triangle that you have to work through every time, and the triangle is three pieces, and it's all in the letter P. It's policy, pedagogy, and politics. And it's like an equilateral triangle in the sense of each is going to play an important and essential and equal role at some point in whatever you're trying to do. And anytime you try to step away and say, I'm just going to focus on the pedagogy. And if you're a teacher, I understand it. If you're an education instructor, I understand it. But just be aware that nothing gets done in this country that does not have a political and a policy piece to it. And why do I separate policy and politics? I don't separate them, but I do want to point out that every important decision in this country, at least, and I would argue that it's pretty much the same across the globe, but every important decision that eventually is going to end up being acted upon by a political figure, whether it's one of the 14,000 school boards passing a budget or announcing a new policy on what teachers are going to be teaching, whether or not it's a 200 student district in Button Willow, California, or LA Unified, all the way to the US Congress passing whatever the next version of ESSA is going to be, or a president proposing in legislation. So elected officials are always part of this. And the best thing, of course, is when policy reflects good pedagogy. But in order to do that, you have to be willing to work to inform them and also to make sure that's being infused through the political system so that message is getting to the policymaker. And by the same token, I don't want to make it sound like the policymaker is the ultimate decider. In many cases, they are. But there are two places where decisions get made, the important decisions get made. First is the millions of decisions that teachers make every day in the classroom affecting their students. But the second place is in the meeting rooms, the committee rooms, whatever, of elected school districts, of state legislatures, of congressional committees, and also reflect state education departments and the U.S. Department of Education. So just recognizing that the policymaker and the practitioner both are making critical decisions in education and they have to relate to one another.
You raise an interesting point about the idea of this being an interrelated triangle. But at the same time, each point of those triangles is massively fractured as well. How do we cope with the, and what have we learned about, like, what part of pedagogy does the policymakers need to know about?
That's, and by the same token, what part of policymaking does the practitioner need to know about? I've spent a lot of time in the last 5 or 6 years working in the area of the science of learning, and I'm not the researcher, but it's how does that research get implemented to the classroom? And incidentally, I'm not, to me, it's not enough to say I'm all about translating the research. Thank you very much, but I got a bookshelf full of translation. How does it get implemented, actually infused into the classroom? And so the question then becomes, how much of a scientist, a neuroscientist, a cognitive psychologist, and so on, is a teacher expected to become or know about in order to teach? So what we have to figure out is what's enough knowledge that makes them relevant but doesn't take them away from what their primary function is. That becomes particularly difficult, I think, because in the case of a teacher or educators generally, they are professionals. They go, they learn a particular discipline, they learn a certain pedagogy. They have a defined, relatively defined art or craft. That's not true with a politician. A politician comes from a wide-ranging background. I used to joke, I felt it was a great privilege to be elected 11 times. People, at least a majority of people, were entrusting you with their well-being. But I used to joke that I'm in one of the few professions that requires absolutely no competency testing. So that need to relate to one another and to understand one another and to be able to explain. I don't think that a teacher should have to understand the intricacies of getting a piece of legislation passed. By the same token, the policymaker is not going to be able, doesn't spend a whole lot of time on Bloom's taxonomy. But what is it that each needs to understand? And I'll take a personal example. I'm privileged to work in California with a number of people that have been working to move literacy policy. But one of the areas, I'm on the board of a school, Chartwell School, in Monterey, California, which works with students with dyslexia and other similar reading issues. And so what we were able to do, Chartwell has a teacher training institute. It has been working with a neighboring school district now for 5 years, training the teachers how to work in structured literacy. And what we were able to do is, and then also, let me just add one other part to that partnership, is working with a major research institution, University of California, San Francisco, which has a major dyslexia and neuroscience research center. So neuroscience, pedagogy, and a school district that really is committed. But then we were able to bring a key legislator there who could see firsthand what it was people were talking about when they say science of reading, and make it real, and could see that with structured literacy, that what we were talking about was not simply another method of a teacher standing up doing what they've always been doing, but instead breaking the classroom into small units. The teacher was working for 45 minutes to an hour in a certain capacity with one group of six students. An aide was working with another six. The other 12 were working on something, students working on something else, and then you rotate. So now you could see how it was that you could bring a sophisticated, structured literacy approach to a classroom of 24 students, and particularly in a school that had a high free and reduced lunch and high English language learner. So it's now nobody walked out of there being able to talk about the hippocampus versus temporal lobes, or I'm way out of my range already. But what they could do, but the legislator could see firsthand what was working. The teachers had worked with the researchers to communicate feedback on what they were observing in their students. And the researchers at the same time were able to communicate what was taking place within those students' brains. In that case, everybody got just enough. What do I need to be effective without just tying me down with a lot of additional information that I don't, won't understand and won't really be able to use.
That's a very nuanced set of communications. How do we build those filters for the policy people to get what they need from the teachers and the teachers to get from the policymakers and the researchers?
We've got to remember the elected policymaker is human, just sometimes more than most, in the sense that policymakers, and I say this as one who was an elected official for 24 years, policymakers, and particularly if you're a legislator in session, you have no more than 2 minutes on any topic. But what they are is they're highly visual and highly tactile. And so you put an experience in front of a policymaker. Don't try and ask the policymaker to read a 10-page brief, but you put an experience in front of that policymaker that is seared into their mind. But the important point is you made an impression. Let me give you a real life example. I remember working with a senator who was very committed, U.S. senator committed to education. And I worked with him in that when he was in the House, and then he went to the Senate, and I was working with the Alliance for Excellent Education. So I went to talk to him about high school transformation and certain issues about high schools. And he would only talk to me about early childhood development. And as we talked more, it came out about 25 years ago, somebody had taken him to an early childhood development center in his state. And what he saw there really just, once again, seared into his mind the importance of it and what could be done. And so he became a champion. And so I didn't get him on high schools that day, but boy, somebody sure did an effective job on early childhood development. And as a result, a lot of early learners benefited. How much information does each of us need? I don't try to, once again, I spent a lot of time now trying to learn about the science of reading and how the various science aspects, cognitive, physical, and so on, relate. But I will never be able to talk extensively or understand extensively all the intricacies of the human brain and its learning processes, particularly then when you get into issues like dyslexia and dyscalculia. But what you can do is take me through that lab. I can see the cross sections of brains. I can see the brain imaging exercises, and I can understand what's being done, and I can understand how the brain is affected. Now, that's what I need in order to be effective. Now, tell me whether or not, and depending upon whether I'm going to be a teacher or an instructor, or whether I'm going to be a policymaker.
These are complex, interrelated issues that require patience. People who brought that senator to see an early childhood program, there was patience on the part of the legislator, patience on the part and deliberateness on the part of the educators to do that. There's so much background noise now. How do we handle it when we have educators with different ideas about what's the most important thing to do or what set of things are the most important thing to do? I mean, you were an advocate for adolescent literacy. And frankly, you cut some really important new ground about extending literacy instruction for kids in their teen and early adulthood years. How do we create the understandings in these buildings for the future?
Let me speak from the policy world. Where I think we need to stress, focus on is, I don't talk about a bipartisan approach to education anymore. I talk about a nonpartisan approach, because what I learned, and I did some work with the Hunt Institute on a project called Across the Aisle, in which the Hunt Institute conducted 4 years of surveys using Republican and Democratic pollsters about what are the public, this was during the height of COVID and all the way up to the present day, what is it that the public is actually saying they want, they expect in education? Interestingly, 80% Republican and Democrat, 80% were unified in saying what they thought the key issues were: mental health, children's students' mental health, making sure children are prepared for college and career, school safety, and that's It's guns, but it's also cyberbullying, and it was also health, of course, in the early days of COVID. And then it was those are the th oh, and literacy. So think about it for a second. For 3 or 4 years, most state legislators have been rapping, just fighting themselves, tying themselves up in what I call red meat issues. And not one of those issues registered above 50% on this survey. So that's why I think it's critically important to approach education as a nonpartisan issue. And there was widespread agreement on what it was that people thought was central top priority for education to be able to impart, deliver, achieve for students. That's a positive message to me because it means as if you can cut through the noise. And the reason that these surveys were conducted in order to show that policymaker, whether it's a school board member, a school superintendent, a legislator, to show them that there's a wind at the back for very substantive education initiatives or reforms. I do think that research is steadily showing, confirming pedagogy that has been there, or it's suggesting that there are areas that it might need to change. I think it's very significant, for instance, that in the area of literacies, over 40 states have now passed legislation that in some way infuse the science of reading into moving it from policy to pedagogy and saying that, particularly focusing on schools of education, that we expect students there to be offered these a certain range of courses. In some cases, licensure will depend upon teachers' knowledge of certain science of reading concepts. So teacher preparation, screening have been uniform areas, and now moving into, but somewhat gingerly because of local control in many states, gingerly into the areas of incentivizing adoption of evidence-based materials in curriculum. Oh, and then also, and I'm sorry, and also supporting with funding teacher preparation and teacher development. So all of the, and incidentally, if you look at those 40 states, it's the reddest states and the bluest states. And so to me, that's a literacy actually is an example of where you can, where the nonpartisan approach works best.
Governor Wise, I want to thank you for your time today. Anything you want to conclude with?
Yes, I do. I want to conclude with we are in a state of great flux, and there are several factors that have converged to, in this almost perfect storm coming out of COVID, and there's still a lot of carryover from that. All that's taken place politically in the United States, and that's when I say flux, is not making a political judgment there. We all have our opinions, but there is no doubt that there is a major changes taking place, and there's been major uprooting. And so something's going to have to get put back, and how is it going to be restructured? And then the third one is AI. So you've got a pandemic, you got politics, and you've got AI all converging at the same time. One of these by themselves might have said we could keep as unacceptable as it is, we can keep doing business as usual. All three combined, so it's not going to happen. And so just get ready to make changes and let's try to make be the as positive as we can about it. How do we make the positive changes we want coming out of this?
Thank you for your thoughts and your efforts on this. This is, it's complex, it's interesting, and it's challenging. As you said, there are 14,000 school districts out there and a lot of opinions. Thank you.
There's a I'm sorry. time.